Hi,
I'm Shivram from UC Berkeley, and today I'm going to talk about how you can use R to write large-scale machine learning and graph algorithms. This is joint work with Indrajit, Alvin, and Rob from HP Labs. So the two big trends that we see in industry today are the growth of big data, which I guess all of you are familiar with, and the advent of using complex algorithms to analyze this the large sets of data that we're collecting. So let's take a look at some of these complex algorithms and see what are the operations that these complex algorithms perform. The most popular complex algorithm, I guess, which is in use, is the PageRank algorithm used by Google. And this computes the dominant eigenvector of a web graph matrix to compute the PageRank vector. Companies like Netflix and Amazon recommend products to their users using machine learning algorithms, and these algorithms perform matrix factorization in order to recommend products to make recommendations. Finally, social networking sites like Facebook or Twitter use graph algorithms in order to compute things like user importance or to detect spammers in the network. So what we see by looking at these complex algorithms is that there are two large classes of complex algorithms that we see, one being machine learning algorithms and the second being graph algorithms. And the insight that we have is that both these classes of algorithms can be expressed as iterative linear algebra operations. So let's take a look at how these algorithms look when they're expressed as iterative linear algebra operations. To start with, let's take the PageRank algorithm that we have here computed using the power method in this case. We have M, which is a web graph matrix, and P, which is a PageRank vector. And the algorithm involves multiplying this web graph matrix with this vector and adding a teleportation vector as described in the PageRank paper. These steps are repeated until you converge to the PageRank vector converges. And as you can see, the expression of this algorithm is really concise in this form. Now let's take a look at how a graph algorithm, like say breadth first search, would look like when we express it using matrix-based operations. Suppose we have a graph G, which is represented by an adjacency matrix here, and X, which is a BFS vector. To do a breadth first search on this graph, we can repeatedly multiply this adjacency matrix with this BFS vector, and each multiplication step corresponds to one more step in the breadth first search algorithm. Once we have discovered all the vertices in the graph, this algorithm will terminate. Looking at both these algorithms, what we can see is that when these algorithms are expressed in terms of matrix-based operations, they're very easy and concise to express. Secondly, there's been a lot of research in the high-performance computing community on how to implement these matrix operations, so we know that there are efficient techniques to implement these matrix operations. So given that that is the case, let's take a look at how you'd go about doing this for some of these big data applications that we're seeing today. So before we go to see how you could probably fit these matrix operations on existing frameworks, what are some of the characteristics that these matrix operations have? The two main characteristics that we've identified, the first being that the matrix operations are coarse-grained and structured. By this, what I mean is that if you have a matrix multiplication, for example, the number of columns in the first matrix has to be equal to the number of rows in the second matrix. There are structural dependencies like that. And the second is that matrix operations sometimes require global state. For example, you need the entire vector to be multiplied with a part of a matrix in order to get the output. So if you look at existing frameworks today which are used for these big data processing, there are two main categories that they fall under. The most popular ones are data parallel frameworks like MapReduce or Dryad. And these frameworks process each record in parallel and thereby get an enormous degree of parallelism. These work very well for the use case that they were designed for, which is like computing sufficient statistics on like one whole pass of the data. There have also been other frameworks like Pregel or GraphLab, which are graph-centric frameworks that have been designed to implement these graph algorithms. And in these graph-centric frameworks, you process each vertex in parallel to get a high degree of parallelism. As you can see, neither of these frameworks exactly fit our requirement of having maintaining structure and global state across these large-scale algorithms that we wish to run. So if we were to implement a large-scale framework for doing these matrix operations, what are some of the challenges and differences that we face when compared to these existing frameworks? I'm going to highlight two major challenges in this talk. The first is how do you handle sparse matrices or sparse data sets that we find? So to motivate this challenge, let's take a look at, for example, a really large matrix that you have, as shown on the left-hand side out here. The colors on each of these rows indicate the number of non-zero entries in each row, with the darker color implying that there are more entries, more non-zero entries in that row. And if we were to divide this matrix into four equal blocks, as shown in this figure, one of those blocks will have an extremely large number of entries compared to the others. So does this happen in practice? That's the next question, right? And we took three real-world data sets here, a couple of web graphs from LiveJournal and a ClueUp crawl, and also a Netflix matrix containing users, movies, and ratings. And we divided that into 100 uniform blocks and plotted what is the density of non-zero elements in each of these blocks. And as you can see, the densest block has a really large number of non-zero elements compared to the sparsest block when you perform such a uniform partitioning of a matrix. In fact, the densest block has up to 1,000x more elements in some cases, and having such a huge imbalance could lead to a computation communication imbalance when you run like a really parallel, large-scale parallel algorithm on these matrices. The second challenge that we face is that the matrices that we're dealing with, they're not static. They're dynamic and evolving data sets. To see an example, if you have a matrix representing ratings in Netflix, there are new movie ratings which keep arriving every day or every hour. And using these new movie ratings, we wish to refine our recommendations and make even better suggestions to users. So we define this problem as performing incremental computation on evolving data. And the challenge here is how do users express such computations, and how do we make sure that these computations run on consistent views of data that we have? To address these challenges, we built a system called Presto, which is a framework for large-scale iterative linear algebra. Our approach has been to start with a popular array-based language like R, and then extend it for scalability and incremental updates. Now that we've seen the motivation for this talk, let's move on to the programming model that we've designed as part of Presto. At the core of the programming model in Presto is this one new data structure that we add to R, which we call as the distributed array. Intuitively, the distributed array is very simple. If you have a really large array that the user wants to use in a program, the distributed array lets the array be partitioned into smaller chunks to be stored on a large number of machines in a cluster. So now let's take a look at some of the language constructs that you can use to perform operations on these distributed arrays. The first language construct is what we call as for each, or which performs iteration over the different partitions in a distributed array. And the idea behind for each is that if you have a particular function that you want to execute on each of these partitions, you can run them in parallel on all the partitions in a distributed array. Finally, we have some set of language constructs that we add for handling incremental updates to data. And there are two constructs here, onChange and update. What these constructs help the user do is that they help the user notify the framework that whenever certain portions of the data change, some computation needs to be re-executed. So for example, if one part of this matrix changes, computation related to that has to be run again. Let's take a more detailed look at how these constructs work by using some code which actually implements the PageRank algorithm that we saw earlier in the talk. So in this case, the blue lines here represent the new language constructs we've added as a part of Presto, while the black lines in black font indicate what is normal R syntax. So to start with, we create two distributed arrays, one for the web graph matrix and the other for the PageRank vector. And as you can see, this command takes in the size, the dimensions, and the blocks that we wish to divide this distributed array into. Next, if we to compute this, to perform this PageRank algorithm across all of these partitions that we have, we use this for each construct that we saw before. And to this for each, you can pass in a closure, which in this case is called calculate. And the calculate function can take in a number of arguments here. And the arguments are flexible in the sense that they can be individual partitions of different distributed arrays, or they can also be entire distributed array as X is in this case, or as P old is in this case. So you can multiply the entire vector with one partition of the array. So now that we've seen how to run this PageRank algorithm on a large scale, how do we handle incremental updates to data? So if we wish to register a particular block of code to be executed whenever data changes, we enclose that within this onChange block. So if we wish to say that whenever the web graph matrix changes, we want this code to be re-executed, we put that code block inside onChange of M. And the other part which I want to point out is that whenever we make updates to a distributed array, we invoke this function update so that other code blocks which might be dependent on this distributed array get triggered by that. So if there's some other onChange block which depends on P, that'll get triggered whenever you call update of P. So now let's move on to look at some of the design aspects and the challenges that we found when we were working with Presto. And in this, I'd like to go back to the sparse matrix partitioning that we saw at the beginning of this talk. So the approach that we use in Presto to handle this problem is that when we start off with the sparse matrix, we divide that into a number of uniform pieces, as we saw before. And once the algorithm starts running, we profile the execution of the algorithm to see how much time it takes to process each of these partitions or the number of non-zero elements in each of these partitions. What this profiling step allows us to do is it allows us to pinpoint which partition could lead to this computational imbalance that we see. And once we have detected that a particular partition has a large number of non-zero elements or takes a long time to process, we split that into two equal partitions, two equal new partitions. Note that the other partitions remain intact as before, and the algorithm can continue running. Also, since the class of algorithms that we deal with are iterative in nature, we are able to do this profiling step for the first few iterations, and then we can converge on a right set of partitioning that we'll use in future iterations. It should be noted that since these operations that we perform on matrices are structured, there could be size dependencies between matrices, and the programmers need to specify a size invariant among matrices so that we can perform the partitioning appropriately. Our experiments show that in terms of the time taken to process each partition, you can get up to 2x improvement depending on the algorithm and the data set that you use. The other design aspect I'd like to highlight is how we handle these incremental updates to data. The way we do this is by making the distributed arrays immutable and versioned. So whenever there's an update to a distributed array, it creates a new version of the distributed array. To show this with a small example, let's say we have this web graph represented by the adjacency matrix. When this adjacency matrix is first created, the onChange block for that is invoked by binding the version number as 1, M1 shown in this case. And the operation within that onChange block will only use M1 for its processing, and it won't see any other updates that happen to the matrix. As a result of that processing, it can create a page rank vector, and when you call update there, it creates the first version of the page rank vector P1. Now, if the web graph changes and a new edge is added, we get a new version of the adjacency matrix M2, which triggers another computation with the version 2 bound as in its argument, and this could result in the computation of another page rank vector, which second version of which will be P2. So the idea behind version distributed arrays is pretty simple. Any call to update increments the version number for a distributed array, while whenever an onChange block is triggered, we bind the version number that will be used by the code executing inside that block so that it sees a consistent view of data. Finally, let's look at some of the applications and results that we have implemented using Presto. We've implemented a number of machine learning and graph algorithms using Presto. These include things like triangle counting using the Lanczos algorithm for top key eigenvalues, and the Netflix recommendation algorithm using matrix factorization. Graph algorithms include things like centrality measures and k-path connectivity. We also have implemented algorithms like a dynamic programming algorithm to perform sequence alignment, which works based on these data-dependent blocks, which keep executed using these onChange that I described before. The key takeaway here is that each of these algorithms can be written in less than 140 lines of R code. So it's really concise and easy to express for programmers. At the risk of committing a sin, as described this morning, I'm going to compare the execution time of Presto with that of Hadoop. Hadoop was storing its data in memory out here to get a more a fair comparison. And the key takeaway here is that here Hadoop represents the data parallel programming model where you have a shuffle, sort, and reduce phase, which Presto does not have. And this leads to a speed up for Presto as you increase the number of workers. In fact, you get up to 20x speed up here. And this was a page rank executed on a graph of 100 million nodes with 1.2 billion edges, and each machine had around 96 gigabytes of RAM. And in addition to the challenges and design aspects that I pointed out, there are more challenges that we point out in the paper. These are related to things like how do you perform memory management when you have a large number of machines, and they're all caching these array partitions as the programs keep executing. There's also a challenge in terms of scheduling operations when you have a large number of arguments to one of these for each blocks. Finally, we also discuss how you could use a large database like HBase and have a driver to integrate with that. And we also discuss ideas on how you can make distributed arrays fault tolerant when you're executing in a large scale setting. So in conclusion, what I'd like to say is that linear algebra is a really powerful abstraction for expressing algorithms. And what we've seen is that it's easy and concise to express machine learning and graph algorithms using linear algebra. However, there are a number of challenges that we face when we want to implement a large-scale linear algebra framework. And I've discussed two of them today, which are handling sparse matrices and dealing with incremental updates to data. We've implemented a framework, Presto, which extends R. And we hope to have an open source version soon for you to use. With that, I'll take questions. Thank you.
So we'll keep this to clarifying questions for now.
Yeah, that's
we'll
okay. This is clarifying. Can I just ask, we're using a dense matrix representation to store the matrices in memory? And
No, we actually use a sparse matrix representation. Okay. Oh, it depends on the matrix, actually.
Sure.
So when you create a distributed array, you specify whether it's sparse or dense.
Okay.
And if it's a sparse matrix, we use the compressed column format for storing sparse matrices.
And for the dense comparison matrix, is that the same?
The comparison was the same. I mean, this was actually run using Apache Mahout, which has a sparse matrix, a sparse vector on a sparse matrix representation.
And it was using that one.
Sorry?
It was using that one, right?
Yeah, it was using that
That's
one.
That's good.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, sure.
Amal Fahad, University of Rochester. So when you do the array division, how far would you go with the division? And what's the threshold that you use in order to decide that this is a dense matrix and actually and I have to divide it further?
Right. That's a good question. So the algorithm we use for that is we compare the maximum to the median. We take a ratio of like the maximum density that you see to the median density that you see. And we have a configurable threshold. If the ratio is beyond that, you perform a split or you repartition it. What we've seen in the use cases that we have is that after some number of splits, you achieve some convergence, like there are no more splits which happen, if the data set doesn't change, that is. So I don't have a very good answer as to how do you know how many steps that you'll go into.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.